Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a show typically about Kenpo, but covering the martial arts in general. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and I am very excited today to have one of my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coaches, Professor Greg Hamilton, on.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for having me. Huge honor to be here.
So this is great for a number of reasons. One is because he's one of my coaches. Two, this is the first in-person interview that I'm going to be conducting today. So that's really, really, really exciting. And yeah, we're gonna get into his story about how Jiu-Jitsu found him and. I'm not sure if you've done any other martial arts.
No martial arts. Okay. Just basketball I played, and then started jiu-jitsu, and it really changed my life in a huge way, as you see.
All right, right on. All right, so so where we'll take it back to the very beginning. When did you first get into jiu-jitsu, and just where did it all start for you?
You know, when I was growing up, I was born in Moscow when it was still the Soviet Union. So, and over there, you know, choices were very limited because, you know, you don't have a lot of opportunities, especially during the days of Soviet Union, where the bigger priority was just how to survive and, you know, parents trying to provide food, you know, and, you know, it was quite a different lifestyle. So when we came to we immigrated to the United States in 1981, and we went from Moscow to Italy, and then we spent a month there going through the whole immigration process. And when we arrived, we went to Los Angeles, West Los Angeles, which is pretty much the largest Russian community outside of Moscow. And over there, it was quite an adjustment. I didn't know any English. I didn't know, you know, and I didn't have any friends. And pretty much my parents, my mom and dad, we immigrated here with my grandparents too. So it was my dad, my mom, and then my mom's parents, so my grandma and grandpa, and they basically watched over me while my parents worked. So, and it was very challenging because I didn't know any English, and going to school and to adapt, it was like, thankfully, there was just kids that spoke Russian at the, you know, school over there. And I think I started in like maybe, was it 7 years old? So it's like second grade or something. And it was really, really tough, and, you know, it was very, like, intimidating, and, you know, I really felt very self-conscious. So I developed this kind of, you know, this feeling of, you know, not being able to completely, let's just say, intertwine myself into, like, the social fabric of schooling and making friends. I had to, you know, and then we kept moving, too. So we moved to West Los Angeles, and then about a year, we moved. And then after we moved, it was like a whole new school. So now I had to make new friends and all that. And it was just tough. And I got bullied when I was younger. And, you know, and I was taller. And that was also an issue. So, and nobody put me, my parents were just busy working. So nobody put me into anything, not martial arts or any sports or anything. You know what I mean? They were just like, just grow up already. You know?
Yeah.
So as I got older, I never really did anything athletic until maybe junior high. And I just started playing sports at school. I started, you know, playing basketball because I'm tall, and then football, and eventually just, you know, became a little bit more athletic. And it wasn't until probably my mid 20s, early 20s, that I really kind of began to pursue kind of physically developing myself in a substantial way, where I began to, you know, and I was like, actually, thinking back, probably through the end of high school, that's when I really began to kind of go and like lift weights and got like a lot bigger, stronger, and more powerful, because I had friends that were just going to LA Fitness back then, actually, and that was a while ago. And but I never did any form of martial arts. It was just mostly basketball. I just really liked it, and you know, and I was pretty good at most sports. It just basketball was really the one I really loved to play. And having that as my kind of athletic outlet, and plus just going to the gym, it was you know, that was pretty much my way until about when I was 29 is when I first started training jiu-jitsu. And I started training because I had a I was working in West Los Angeles in a high rise, managing a hedge fund. So mm-hmm. I used to trade securities, and I worked at a private hedge fund out of a brokerage. So it was convenient because, like, I have an office like we have here, and then the brokerage is literally, like, right outside. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I needed anything, you know, unlimited resources and so forth, it was, like, you know, it was fantastic. And one of the guys from the brokerage, the owner of the brokerage, he wanted me to train the new guy. Mm-hmm. So the new guy, ironically, his name is also Greg. And he, you know, he always had this kind of, like, you know, rough around the edges vibe. And, you know, in the world of male hierarchy, when all discussions break down, it's really all about kind of who can kick the hell out of whom. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's kind of like, you know, that really goes a long ways, even in the business world. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So when I was training him, he all of a sudden told me, I think it was probably... maybe in December of 2003, he told me, oh, I started doing jiu-jitsu. I'm like, yeah, you know, because I knew about it because of Hoist Gracie mm-hmm. and UFC 1 and so forth. And he goes, you really got to try it. And, you know, you got to come with me and try it. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know, This school was like 30 minutes away. Not that it's 30 minutes far. It's just 30 minutes LA traffic
yeah,
style,
which is LA, like yeah.
literally it's like almost down the street. So I just kind of like, yeah, I can't because I have to be up because I'm working on East Coast time. Mm-hmm. So the stock market opens in Los Angeles at 6:30 a.m. And I have to be up at like 2 in the morning to prepare for the open. So I have no, like, real social life because the stock market closed at 1. Then I'd go to the gym. By the time I closed out, it was, like, maybe 2. I leave the office 2:30, go to gym, go play basketball for a couple hours. Then I come home, and then I'm, like, have to figure out how to get to sleep because I got to be up at, like, 2, 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, how am I going to do that, you know? So long story short, finally he broke me down because he kept giving me that look. Like, he would tell me about what they learned. You know, and I understand the terminology because I'm like a fan of the UFC at that mm-hmm. time. And he's telling me like, oh, we did this and we did that. And he's giving me that look like he knows that he thinks that he can take me. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm the black belt in this scenario. And this guy over here, who's like a white belt trainee, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not even licensed to trade securities. I'm like teaching him stuff and he's all like giving me that look. And I thought to myself, you know what? I gotta make time. I made time, and finally I went and decided to go to the 6 p.m. class at this absolute hole in the wall in North Hollywood. Oh, so I'm in West L.A. and off of Wilshire Boulevard and La Brea, which is like, you know, it's kind of like a financial, it used to be like mm-hmm. more financial district stuff. It's like, you go more west, and then you're going into Beverly Hills. And it was great because I lived in an apartment. Literally, like, the office building, it was like where they had they also had the Screen Actors Guild mm-hmm. inside of that building. So you see a lot of the celebrities going in there, and it was like maybe like 20-story building. And my apartment building was literally right next door. So I never drove to work. I walked to work because it was literally like I'm in my apartment here, and then there's my office building, you know? So I decided one night to go, and I'm driving into North Hollywood, and I'm like, where is this place? And it's like nighttime, you know? And I'm driving in a part of North Hollywood that you don't ever want to go to.
Oh, yeah. Because
it's not a very, you know, North Hollywood, it's not bad. Like, there's parts that are, like, not bad, but then there's parts that are, like, not good at all. You know what I mean? And there's parts that you just don't want to go into, you know? And I'm like, what? And I'm looking at the address, you know, because back then there was really no, like, GPS. And I'm like, what is this place? No sign, nothing. And then I'm like on it was on Cahuenga. So it's like a two-lane north, two-lane south. And finally I look and I'm driving by and it was like literally like that place right there with that gray building right there, that mm-hmm. open sign. And I'm like, is that it? And I look, and the windows are all, like, fogged up.
Yeah.
The lights are on, but, like, there's nowhere to park. It's literally, like, nowhere to park because it was just, like, street parking. Finally found a spot to park way down the street. I'm walking, and I'm, like, you know, because it's, like, not a good neighborhood at all.
Mm-hmm.
I walk inside, and it's literally, like, door, like, a patch of wood floor like this. And then mats. Dudes all over the mat. It was packed. It was literally probably a fourth of our mat. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk in and the instructor's laying there like on his back. And I didn't even know who it was. I'm like, oh, hey. He goes, oh, yeah, you're Greg. And I'm like, hey. He goes, oh, yeah, Greg said that you're going to come by. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, hi. You know, what's your name? And he goes, oh, my name is D. And I'm like, oh, hey, D, what's up? You know, and he goes, I'm like, what do I do? He goes, oh, just take your shoes off. Come on, let's go roll. And I didn't know what roll meant. Yeah. I'm like, well, you know, so I took my shoes off. And at that time, I'm like 6'6", and I'm like 250, and I'm in really good shape because I'm like playing basketball, like as competitive a basketball as you can play without actually playing college or professional basketball. So my, you know, because I used to seek out, you know, going to play basketball in the areas where there's good pickup games. So I would go like Venice Beach, and you know, it took me a while to get a good game going because you know you got to be selected to the team and all that. You know, being one of the few, and if not sometimes only white guys over there. You know, it's like you know, but once I was picked, I proved myself very quickly because I don't want to say I was good. But let's just say I was an asset to whatever that team would be, you know, whether it's 3-on-3 or 4-on-4, whatever it may be. And I was in good shape, good cardio. I played for hours, you know. Mm-hmm. And I walked in and he goes, yeah, just take your shoes off. Come on, let's roll. And I'm like, what do I do? He goes, well, just try to choke me. And I'm like, how? He goes, oh, however you want. And I remember making this gesture. I'm like, like this, like serial killer, you know, I put my hands out in like two semicircles to make, you know, he goes, yeah. He goes, yeah, like that. I'm like, okay. And I put one knee down because he was on his back with his feet up, you know, and then I put second knee down and he just sat up and put it kind of his hooks on the inside of my thighs like a butterfly guard and literally pulled me on top of him. And I just started floating and I had zero balance and I was unable to do anything. And I remember that I was just like floating, trying to like figure out what to do. And he just, you know, nicely swept me, got on top, choked me. It was literally, it seemed like a lifetime, but I know that it was probably within the vicinity of maybe 30, 40 seconds. And he choked me. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, what was that? And then I'm like, okay, I got this now. Now I understand. And again, same thing. I'm on my knees. He pulls me on top. And then he sweeps me, gets on top, mounts me, chokes me. Then I'm like, and that was like literally within like 20 seconds, you know. And then I'm like feeling like already like tired. And then I'm thinking, okay, now I understand what he's going to do. Now I'm not a fool. Now I'm just not going to let him do what he just did to me twice, you know. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, like, excuse me. And then he did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, I was like resisting, and I just like was like worn out. And I think he tapped me the same exact way, like four or five times. It literally was probably under 2 minutes, and I just couldn't breathe. And I'm sitting there, and I can't breathe. And I'm like, this is weird, like, because, like jiu-jitsu, you're using your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I got this stupid cough.
No problem.
So jiu-jitsu, you know how it is. You're using your whole body, and then it's not like, you know, your one arm or legs are demanding blood flow. The whole body is demanding blood flow. You got to breathe. And in basketball, it's a little bit different because it's more like leg-based, you know, so your upper body's not, like, pumping, you know. And I thought to myself, I don't speak this language. And if I don't learn how to speak this language, I'm going to get destroyed. Because I don't even know what I'm doing. And ultimately, I decided that I have no choice. I have to learn. Sorry, Rich.
No, no problem. No problem.
You want to pause it? I remember I'm sitting there, and not only can I not breathe, it is so humid in there, and it smells like sweat on sweat on sweat. Cause there's dudes sweating, and all like nobody had a white gi. They were all gray gis that started white, and a whole the dudes just like sweat all over the mat, sweat like everywhere. And I'm like, oh man, I can't breathe. And then I said to myself, I have to learn how to speak this language. If I run into a small human being that speaks this language, even a little bit, I have no chance. And if I learn how to speak this language, being the size that I am, I think that it will benefit me considerably. So that was the very beginning of my journey. And I started training like 3 times a week, and then 2-3 times, and I knew that it's not enough. And then I started training more, and then eventually started going as much as I could because, you know, with work, it was just like tough with the schedule. Oh, yeah. But I started going, and it was fantastic. And I just really, really loved it. And, you know, and I started going not at the 6 o'clock class. He did semi-privates at 4 p.m. So I would go at the 4 p.m. class, which is a lot better for me. And my good old buddy Greg was in that class too. So sometimes 4 or 5 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he never once submitted me. In the beginning, he would like kind of control me and mm-hmm. like, you know, but it took me probably about 2-3 weeks of understanding like what I'm learning before I began to dominate him in a way where just I was able to get him in positions where I could see the first basic submission I could do, which would be a key lock or Americana
mm-hmm.
from a side control or from a mount. Because by the time I learned that you could do a key lock from the mount also and from side control, those two realities didn't merge until later on, which mm-hmm. is just ridiculous when you think about it because, you know. But it took me about a month before I like submitted him, and he never once submitted me, not once. So that was a big deal. Because now in the office, the dynamic changed. Now I give him that look, and I'm like, "Hey, that's not the way you fill that order." And then I give him that look. Don't make me put you down on the ground here, and you know, show you what we did last night.
I like it. I like there's a few things about what you said. One, I love that your story is very similar to a number of the other jiu-jitsu practitioners that I've talked to that they get in there thinking, okay, yeah, I can do this thing, and then someone just, you know, for lack of a better term, just embarrasses them with the
yeah it was you know what it is I mean, you know, from a standpoint, it really depends on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was more so I my eyes were opened to a reality that I didn't know existed. And you know, I've always been very driven my whole life and very goal oriented and very like relentless at pursuing goals. And I always had and still have a work ethic that just outperformed everybody around me. That may have not made me a lot of friends in my, you know, field of whatever I was doing at that time. Because in L.A. and, you know, being Russians have a certain work ethic that tends to be like relentless. Like my dad had an insanely crazy work ethic. He worked like a machine. And it's not like he went out and did labor. He did business and built business, and he pursued like very huge, abundant, you know, sums of money in return for what he was doing. So it wasn't like he's getting, you know, an hourly wage for what he's doing. He's like out there like building like empires at that time. And I think, you know, at least I got those qualities from him. Because there's a lot of things that I saw, that, especially later on in life, that weren't all that good about my dad. But aside from that, I got quite a work ethic, you know? So for me, it was like, man, this is amazing. I need to learn this. I can really benefit from this. And I know that this will really boost my confidence, because I always knew down deep inside that no matter how big I am, how strong I am, how athletic I am, in the very core, I knew I did not know how to fight. I think my size always kept me out of fights. And I think that this inner kind of reality that you kind of as a man don't really look at in an honest way, to where, you know, because, like, you know, what's that saying goes, that like 95%, 100% of 90% of men think that they know how to fight, when in reality, like, they don't, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. In a real fight, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always thought to myself, well, you know, if it really came down to it, I would, you know, I could handle this, that, the other, but, like, you know, and then, you know, and I never really got into situations where there were any, like, fights, you know, but you get in the situations where you begin to feel that dynamic where they're, you know, somebody may, you feel the aggressor's energy, you know what I mean? Whether it's in LA and maybe you're out in, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night, or some guys, or maybe you're by yourself or with a friend, there's 2-3 guys or whatever it may be. And down deep inside, you know, I'm like, oh shit, I hope I don't have to get in a fight. Cause down deep inside, you are your like inner voice is telling you, you don't know how to fight. So don't. But if you have to, but don't, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like that. So probably about 3 months after I started training jiu-jitsu, because it wasn't just jiu-jitsu. So what we did was is that I would go in. It started as jiu-jitsu, gi jiu-jitsu. But then my instructor back then, he was a black belt in judo. Mm-hmm. So then we would do a lot of stand-up and throws, which was very painful because we would do throws and he never taught us how to fall. So that's very painful. Yeah. And the mats were really super hard. Okay? Mm. This is not like our mats over here.
Yeah.
And you're getting thrown and you don't even know how to land. And then the guy throwing you is not throwing you the right way. And you're getting thrown the wrong way and you're landing the wrong way. So, you know, imagine them, how much light, you know, I'm surprised people weren't like breaking necks over there in arms, you know. And then it would be like, then we would wrestle, because he also wrestled in college. He was from Iowa. And then, so it's like jiu-jitsu. Okay, now we're doing judo. Okay, now we're doing wrestling. Okay, and it was, oh, now we're doing stand-up. Now we're putting the gloves on, and now we're doing boxing. And now we're combining. Now we're doing, like, all right, you got the gloves on. And then your partner, and you have your back to the wall, and now your partner's got to take you down, and you're like, you know, got to use strikes to, mm-hmm. to fight him off. And then, you know, and the drill was, like, for example, one of the drills was that you got to actually get to the body and to the hips and begin to take the guy down so you don't get hit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's a clinch, and you'd get hit really, really hard because you're, number one, you know, you're like all... You know, it's hard to shoot him for a takedown when you know the other guy's like striking. So, like, you can't go in like this. You're going like this. You're getting hit in the back of the head. And dudes are, like, all, like, swinging, like, full blown, you know. And it's, mm-hmm. like, it was crazy. So it was this, like, I guess a certain mixed martial art. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So having gone through that, like, constant beating, like, literally I would drive there and I would think, painful, because I don't know what I'm walking into. Like, you know, yeah. that you're walking in and we're gonna be doing jiu-jitsu. But if you were walking in and you're like, oh, we're doing Muay Thai right now, I'm like, yeah, put the gloves on, we're kicking each other. And then, like, next day you show up, like, yeah, we're gonna have one glove on and then we're gonna do jiu-jitsu and then we're gonna grapple with the one, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just this constant mix, and like, you don't know. Oh, and then all of a sudden we would do crazy conditioning.
Oh my right? goodness.
And then it's like, it's all of this. And then he would wear us out, and then he would have us, then we would do jiu-jitsu once we'd like completely like dead. He would have us do all these like crazy exercises and stuff like that. So about 2-3 months after I began to really understand how to control somebody and like apply like a key lock from side control, because that was my move. I realized, I thought to myself, you know, I can completely destroy like a human being that doesn't really have training. And if they do have training, they probably have to have like more training than I do. And all of a sudden I began to like realize that I don't want to fight. Not because of previous reasons, which were more so rooted in, I don't want, you know, I'm concerned with something happening to me. I was like, I don't want to fight because I could literally cripple somebody. And that's when I began to realize really early on what a powerful, incredibly, like, empowering adventure I was on with this whole jiu-jitsu journey. Just really transformative, because I saw how it completely translated to the way I walked, to the way my posture was, to the way I would look at and assess. And my instructor at that time, he was really like super raw. So he would say, like, you know, you're gonna walk in a gas station, you're gonna be like, oh man, I could, are we allowed to cuss? Or
go ahead.
He goes, you'll see. He goes, you're gonna walk in and get, because with what you know, he goes, you could fuck somebody up. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, he goes, no, it's fine. He goes, look, you walk in a gas station and you're gonna say to yourself, you can see a big guy, and you, and before training, you'd look at it like, oh man, I don't want to fight with this guy. And now you're gonna look at him and like, man, I wonder how long it'll take me to fuck him up. I won't. But if I had to, yeah, you know, like that. Yeah. And so he would, you know, like prep you for that, so that, you know, and maybe if another instructor wouldn't say that, you kind of wouldn't think that. And now you're thinking in these terms too, of like the power that you have, which is very good, because, you know, like, you know, a good man is not a peaceful man. Usually peaceful people in my life, were typically weak people. And it's not only weak men, but weak people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's the weak people that will stab you in the back, first and foremost. It's the weak people that will do all kinds of just underhanded, like malevolent, wicked stuff that is just beyond comprehension. You know what I mean? It's the man that is trained in like violence and has the discipline to not use it and abuse it, who truly is the peaceful man. Because if you don't know violence, then being so-called peaceful is your only option.
Yeah.
And when you don't have the tools and skills needed to protect yourself, and especially your wife, and then, or your girlfriend, and especially as a man, and especially when you have children, to especially when your children are girls, and you know, and boys too, obviously. I have two daughters, but, you know, you, what are you really? And a peaceful man is somebody who really understands like the capacity of how violent they can be, and to understand that you're disciplined and controlled enough not to abuse that power that you have. And I learned early on that the amazing power and skill of jiu-jitsu that was just developing more and more and more was just giving me more confidence, more empowerment. My body began to change in ways that basketball and like going to the gym never really changed it. It began to like transform into some like in a unit that had to work in conjunction with all your body parts. You know what I mean? Like basketball, I had a strong lower body. I didn't have a powerful upper body, and plus I'm tall, so it's like, you know, like bench pressing is tough when you're tall and all that. But I realized in jiu-jitsu very, very quickly, I didn't have a strong core. I was like strong, but not a strong core. And that was like something that took a while to develop. I remember like to really have like core strength, it took me about like maybe a year before I even understood that now I have core strength. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, you know, and my cardio was always good. It just got a lot better. I just adapted real quick. And, know, and then everything just began to change. And the more I trained, like the more confident I became, and the more just like, you know, you begin to own your own masculinity as a man, because, you know, I looked back and I thought to myself, my God, what a huge disservice my parents did for me as a boy, as a future, like, you know, teen, and to not put me in some sort of program where I would learn how to fight, you know? And, oh, yeah. And I was bullied also when I was younger, and I was bullied in high school, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was really a tough situation. And I had no solutions for, you know, my, you know, issues in high school where I was bullied, because I went to private junior high school, mm-hmm. and then I went to a public high school. Uh-huh. So I didn't have that transfer of friends. So my friends from my junior high school that went to private junior high school went to a private high school. And then I went into high school, and at freshman, I don't know anybody. You know what I mean? And it was like, ugh, man, it was tough. And my parents really did me a huge disservice by not putting me into some kind of a program where I would learn how to fight. And I think that, like, if they would have put me into something like karate and all that, it, you know, knowing and understanding, you know, without, there's a lot of legitimate, like, karate, like, you know, Kenpo and, like, you know, Shotokan and all that. But there's a lot of, like, schools that teach things that are more rooted in kind of martial arts that aren't exactly applicable in a realistic scenario.
Yeah.
And you see that exposed online, and people think that, you know, things work, when in the reality is it doesn't, you know? Like, at all the, like, McDojo life that you see on Instagram and all the things they post. Yeah. Another one is, like, you know, like, Sistema, you know, the Russian mm-hmm. system, you know? And then you get the guy with, you know, with the big... Yeah, and he's, like, sitting in a chair, and he's all...
couch jujitsu.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, and every parent, I would highly suggest that if you're a parent of whether a boy or girl, for similar reasons and for totally different reasons, you have to make it a priority to put them into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, into a Gracie jiu-jitsu structure where they're going to learn how to defend themselves, and they're going to learn not only the self-defense aspects of jiu-jitsu, but they'll learn the beautiful, more sport aspects of jiu-jitsu, both of which are very important to know. I have seen that when there's too much of an emphasis on self-defense jiu-jitsu, it tends to... people lose interest. Mm-hmm. What really, I believe, grips people is when they're faced with that reality that they actually start training and doing live sparring and rolling, as we call it in jiu-jitsu, and they get that, like, reality of, like, oh my God, I am completely helpless. Because when you're doing, like, self-defense, it's, like, cooperative, mm-hmm. and you're never really, like, going full-blown, and, you know, and if you don't really have, like, the beautiful thing about sport jiu-jitsu is that it's the only martial art, if you really think about it, where you can literally go 100% to the death in a controlled manner and finish alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't do that in boxing. You can't, you know, I mean, you could, but I mean, you're going to, I mean, how many rounds can you go full blown in boxing where you're, like, really going full blown? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
You're going to get hurt. It's not sustainable. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't come back day after day and train, and, you know, you train 3 days a week, good, 4, 5, 6, but you can go full blown. In self-defense jiu-jitsu, it's these more simulated cooperative techniques, but you have to know both. But in the sporting jiu-jitsu is where you learn what it feels like for another human being to impose their physical will onto you, and how helpless you can be if you do not have the skills to be able to apply in those problematic situations where you have to have these skills in order to be able to apply solutions for these problems that you're literally faced with on an immediate sense. For parents, for parents of boys, I would say put them into jiu-jitsu, because they will learn, number one, how to defend themselves, and number two, they will learn the control, restraint, discipline of how not to be bullies. Typically, bullies are kids that grow up in households where they have certain issues as a result of parenting that results in this characteristic where this child is trying to project onto others what they experienced at home. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where typically kids, God forbid, are abused, God forbid, are neglected, God forbid, are ignored. And typically, it's usually households that I have found where there's an absence of the father. Usually, in most of my experiences, boys that ultimately were more on the, had those bully characteristics and they were just weren't very good kids, it, most of the time, the first common denominator was there was an absentee father. And the mother cannot fill the role of the father. A mother can take a baby and raise a baby boy to a boy, but a father takes a boy and turns that boy into a man. A mother takes a baby girl and raises her into a girl, but the father's responsibility, especially with girls, to take the girl and raise her into a woman. And the dynamic and the duality between the father and mother is vital, because the mother will give the nurturing and so forth, but the father will give that structure, will give that discipline, also give that love and the patience and affection, so that both boys and girls will learn from their father how to be strong, how to be protective, how to be loving and kind, and the balance of it all. The mother is more for, you know, obviously for discipline purposes and for love and, you know, more affectionate and all that. But for boys, going back to the whole topic of why it's important for parents to give boys, is because they'll learn how not to be pieces of trash human beings. They'll learn how to defend themselves. They'll learn how to stick up for others. They'll learn honor. They'll learn control. They'll learn confidence. They'll learn, they will get in touch. And this is good for, it also applies for adults. Is that like what when I started jiu-jitsu at 29, I really didn't understand who I really was. Jiu-jitsu introduced me to me, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Jiu-jitsu introduced me and helped me understand that this is what power, physical power and strength feels like. Like, I knew strength, like lifting weights and all that, but when you have to impose your physical will onto another human being who's resisting and trying to also impose this physical will, and I had guys that were bigger than me that would destroy me. I had guys that were smaller than me who destroyed me and everybody in between. Then I was able to develop the skills to where I was a lot harder for them. It was a lot harder for them to destroy me. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. It was a lot harder for the little guy to destroy me. They potentially will still. And then the balance would shift. It would shift. It would shift. And boys will get in touch with their like inner mini male and mini manhood that they need to develop to get in touch with their power, like physical power, muscularity, and strength. That no other activity will give them except, I would think, wrestling. Like wrestling, for boys, I think is absolutely priceless. And the combination of being in a great environment, like here, like with us, for example, you know, here at Henzo Gracie DFW, you know, Professor Phillip, he is an incredible, not only instructor, but a mentor to the children. An example of a great leader who leads from the front, an amazing mentor, an amazing, like, you know, person who has a balance between projecting strength, but at the same time, you know, being nice and kind and everything in between. And kids have to learn, both boys and girls, to have a mentor in their lives that will show them that type of man and that type of leadership. Because a lot of fathers lack the ability to do what mentors like Professor Philip and, you know, I mean, like, I don't want to sit here talk about myself in this capacity, but meaning that what my responsibility that God blessed me with, the gifts that I possess today after 21 years of jiu-jitsu, to be a mentor to kids, teens, and adults is absolutely vital, so that at a young age, they see what honorable men behave like, act like, how they treat other people, and how they conduct themselves in various scenarios, all of which play out at the academy, you know?
Gotcha.
For girls, it's vital, because the reality is assault, sexual assault for girls doesn't happen standing. And by the time, I believe the statistics are that a girl, that a teen, that a woman, young woman, is in college, there's a 1 in 3 chance that she will experience some kind of sexual assault or assault, which is an insane statistic, 1 out of 3. And typically, those assaults come from somebody they know. And that's an even scarier statistic if you really think about it. And I have 2 daughters. So statistically, the odds are not very much for them. And, you know, being a father of 2 daughters, you know, I fortunately, but at the same time, unfortunately, the reality of this cruel and wicked world is not very kind. And, you know, children are innocent, and their innocence is fractured and broken and destroyed far too often at a very early age. And there's nothing more empowering for a child than to know how to defend themselves in situations where parents are not around, like at school, to help them get out of situations that they otherwise will not have the skills to be able to handle and get out of. Children who get bullied are scarred for life if they don't learn how to overcome those horrifically deep psychological scars, like I had growing up. When I was bullied, I was mostly bullied in high school, and that lasted throughout all my years, and to a certain degree still has an impact. Oh, but yeah. I've learned how to use it in a positive way, because now none of that matters. But I understand both sides of it. But for girls, in particular, with sexual assault and how prevalent it is now, with just physical assault, and, you know, we have the women's seminar coming up for self-defense and survival tactics that I'm incredibly proud to be able to provide, and it's, like, free of charge and all that. The point isn't that it's free. The point is that, you know, it's for girls 12 and up. And we did one about a year ago at the previous place, and we had about 30 women, and it was astonishing how fragile a lot of these women are. But women need men, strong men around, to be protective, because a woman is not built to be a man. A woman is built to be a woman, you know? And they say, what is a woman? And what a woman is, it's not a woman is a human being who is not a man, you know? but a man, it needs to be able to protect the woman. And a lot of men have no idea how to protect a woman in a situation where, you know, you pull up to get gas, and or maybe you're going to the grocery store and some maniac having a bad day comes in there, and all of a sudden you walk out, he's walking in, and all of a sudden there's some sort of altercation. Most men don't know what to do. But as far as, like, women goes, girls, you don't have to be a trained super black belt in jiu-jitsu, as far as a female goes, in order to be able to defend yourself. You know, a huge part of self-defense is awareness and understanding how to keep yourself out of bad situations that ultimately are just the result of bad decisions that can be avoided. Just going to, you know, going home at night and you need gas and you didn't realize that you were running low, whatever, you were driving, you see a gas station on that corner, on that corner. I immediately make an assessment. On that gas station, it may be cheaper, but there's that car there, that car there, that car there, and you have to profile, okay? And there's nothing wrong with profile. It's not racist. It's not anything. It's the reality, okay? And you look and you say to yourself, degree of threat there, there, and there. And then over there, you see maybe some older lady getting out of the car and then, you know, getting gas, or maybe, you know, older man or whatever. You go to that gas station because it's safer. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Situational awareness is huge.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and somebody who's not trained in something basic is that situational awareness will think, oh, that's 10 cents cheaper than that. And oh, I'm just going to go there. They pull up and then all of a sudden intersection between three guys that are there. And all of a sudden, oh, hey, and the woman's alone. And then, you know what I mean? All that could have been avoided. But a woman doesn't need to have, like, some sort of crazy training in jiu-jitsu in order to just have a fighting chance. That's really what a woman truly needs to be taught, is the mindset to understand that if there is a physical altercation, you have really three types of aggressors. You have, like, a psychopath that wants to, like, murder you because they're just insane or hopped up on drugs. That is a whole other level of threat, right? You have the one who wants to rob you and, let's say, capitalize off of your material possessions, and you can exchange in a calm, confident manner your possessions for your life, because nothing that you have is worth holding on to and risking that guy who could be at some desperate, God forbid, situation. Maybe he needs drugs and he wants your stuff to go get drugs. And you know what? Maybe he needs to feed his child. And maybe and possibly the feeding of the child may be even more of a desperate need for money than even the drugs. And you don't know. And then there's the guy who's a lunatic and just wants to just corner that woman and rape her. That's the sad reality. And most victims get paralyzed into compliance and submission because of fear. A woman just needs to have a fighting chance. And this is what we teach all of our female students. What it feels like to have another person impose their physical will onto you without you having any control. And now you have to have a fighting chance, and you have to apply the skills you learn here at our academy in order to be able to solve those problems. Obviously, they're not, you know, situations, God forbid, that are, you know, looking towards sexual assault or something. But if you really think of a closed guard, that's the situation that a woman gets into in that type of a more of a sexual assault scenario. And a woman needs to know how to have just a fighting chance. And that fighting chance is all mindset. Otherwise, they're paralyzed with fear. I have heard story after story from students, female students, who have confided in me, whether they've had experiences of domestic violence, where they were abused when they were younger. It's tragic, tragic. It's like, it is chilling to know what certain human beings who confide in me as their professor, their mentor, their therapist, somebody that they really trust and look to as a protector, you know? Because for me, my responsibility as the leader of this academy is to be the protector of everybody here, period. Children, girls, boys, teens, men, women, everybody, period. It all starts and all stops with me, period. I will always be the first one that will confront whatever it may be and to keep my students safe, period. I don't care who or what it is, you know? And the stories after story, it is horrific. And all a woman needs to do is just have a fighting chance. and training jiu-jitsu, especially early on, girls, they adapt to jiu-jitsu way, way, way faster than most boys do. They get it quicker. They're much more teachable. They're a lot more aggressive. It's amazing. Oh yeah, you know. And as a result, it is absolutely priceless. And all of this lasts through. Like my daughters, unfortunately, they don't see me as Professor Greg. Obviously, they see me as Dad. And jiu-jitsu is just not their thing. But jiu-jitsu is built into them. And even though, like, my older daughter, she's going to be 15, and she's busy. She's, you know, doing her own athletics. She's, you know, trying out for drill team and all that kind of stuff. And God bless her. And, you know, she's in great shape and all that kind of stuff. But the last time she was on the mat, and the last time I actually rolled with her about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was blown away by how much instinctively she knew without consistently training jiu-jitsu and how powerful she was. Not strong, powerful. And for me, I know one thing, that she's got the mindset that God forbid something happens, she will fight for her life. And that will be the difference between a few bruises that will heal or, God forbid, submission, and scars that will haunt and last a lifetime. You know, so we have a big responsibility here. So I don't remember what I even got off a tangent. I went from 2004 to 2025 and then back to 2023, and now here we are.
No, I like it. And that's the one of the fun things about doing this show is just letting things go however way that they're going to go. And
yeah.
I pretty much say this with all my guests. I mean, we're obviously going to have to do a part two and three and four and five, and because there's so many other items that we want to get to.
Sure.
I did want to kind of mention some things that were coming to my head as you were.
Yeah, speaking. Go ahead, because you need a chance to say something.
Oh no, there's something I also say about my guests. One of the great things about this is when letting people go, it makes my job easier. So I don't have to come up with things to say, but just some things that kind of came to mind. One, I'm working on getting a Professor Phillip on. He was I'm not really sure how to frame it, but he has black belt in Kenpo.
Yes, he does. Yes. So he's got multiple black belts in Kenpo and something else. And he's been doing martial arts for 27 years. I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 21. He's been doing jiu-jitsu for, I'm 21 years plus. He is, I believe, 17 years plus in jiu-jitsu, I think 18 almost. And then he's 27 years plus in martial arts.
Yeah.
So, and Phillip's knowledge of martial arts is far more extensive than mine,
I'm really looking forward to having him on.
Yeah, it's gonna be great
as well. One of the reasons why is his story of getting into jiu-jitsu is just I love it. But one of the kind of takeaways from what you were saying and with his journey was that, you know, he's this, when he got started in jiu-jitsu, he's this big time black belt already.
Yes.
And, you know, some kind of spoiling the story a little bit, but a guy with 6 months of training just destroyed him.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. With all that black belt knowledge, you go in having this sense of confidence, and then the reality hits you.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, just getting that training. You know, you don't have to stay in and spend all the years getting the black belt. Just getting that initial training,
absolutely,
is something to have in your toolbox and is important in my. So I've been doing martial arts formally since the 90s, early 90s, and honestly, when I started, I was not really particularly interested in jiu-jitsu. So I was training in Kenpo, and the first UFC came out, and me and my buddies were watching this, and It's like, oh, like, you know, what style is going to win?
You don't even know what to say. Like, what is that?
Yeah, and Hoist Gracie came out there, and we're like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Well, Hoist used to be my teacher. After I left that North Hollywood place, I wound up under Hoist, which was mind-blowing. Yeah, nice. And then that's how I was exposed to the whole Gracie Academy, Gracie family, and just everybody as a result of my my next, you know, evolution. Mm-hmm. Not evolution, but, you know, just because it's tough. You move, and then it's hard to continue to go to the same place. And,
yeah.
And then I had a little, I was promoted to blue belt after 17 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like I started at the beginning of 2004. I was promoted to blue belt at the end of 2005, like at the end of summer. And I was promoted to blue belt before my little buddy Greg was, okay? Because he began to quit because, like, he, like, couldn't handle the consistency, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that work ethic was already falling off in the office, so I knew.
Like, yeah.
And it was important for me to outperform him in jiu-jitsu because I'm like that because my work ethic is, like...
Yeah, no, I've so, definitely got a taste of your work ethic.
Yeah, and I remember at the end of 2005, I was promoted to blue belt. I was training, and then, like, I was at home, and I'm like, I got some, like, side pain. And I'm like, oh, man, like, what is that? You know, and I had this weird pain. I felt like I had a stomach ache, and I'm, like, really good about not going to the doctor. Until it's like later.
Guilty of that too.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, a day, and then like a second day, I'm like, oh man, I can't even sit up. I'm like, I'm probably constipated, you know. And I'm like, and I couldn't even go to the bathroom because, like, you know, like I go to the bathroom and like you just start to push and there's a, and then the pain got worse and worse and worse. Hmm. So I went to the doctor like 4 days later, if not five. I like to wait till the very end, which is not a good thing to do, but, you know. And my doctor goes, look, he goes, everything's good, perfectly fine, but he goes, we need to go right across the street to the hospital. The hospital is in Burbank. And he goes, and we need to get you admitted because we need to remove your appendix. And I'm like, look, I got a very busy day. I said, how about we do this? I'm going to go and I'm going to come back and we'll make an appointment and then we'll get it done. He goes, that's fine. He goes, but look, if you leave here and your appendix ruptures, which it's probably right on the brink of rupturing, you're going to die. You got about less than a 1% chance of living. So I'll see you next time. I said, oh, fine. And I went across the street, and then I had the appendix removed and all that. And I spent a week in the hospital because it was like infected already. And then after that, I was still driving to the North Hollywood place, and then I couldn't train for like 3-4 months.
Oh,
I couldn't even sit up. That's how bad it hurt.
You know? Oh, my goodness.
And then I was... at my office, it's like beginning of 2006 already. It was already like 2 years plus after I started training. And then I'm walking to the parking lot and I looked at this place. It was called LA Fitness, LA Boxing, boxing gym. And then I look and, you know, they do the painting on the windows, you know, and then I'm like, jiu-jitsu. I'm like, oh, I'm like, that'd be great. My office is like in the back and in the front, you know, it was like let me try that. And then I went and I started going to jiu-jitsu, and it was this brown belt there that was really, really good. And then it was like a place where at the corner of the boxing gym where they would just do, you know, shadow boxing or whatever it was, you know. And then they had mats stacked up, you know, the triple mats that fold out, you know, they like fold.
Oh, yeah.
With the Velcro. So we had to lay the mats out and all that. And it was just great. And all like 20, 25 people would show up and train. The space was not any smaller or bigger than the North Hollywood place, maybe a little smaller. It was great, you know, and I didn't know that at that time, my new instructor became a very good friend, Pat King. He wore a gi and it said Hoist Gracie Jiu Jitsu. And I thought he just had that because he was just a fan of Hoist. I didn't understand that because at that North Hollywood place, everything ended at my instructor. Mm-hmm. There was nobody above him. There was no Gracies. He never talked about anybody. He never talked said about anything. He never told us who promoted him to black belt because you couldn't even ask because I heard it like, who promoted D to black belt? Because don't even ask him. I'm like, why? He goes, no, you don't ask. I'm like, well, who promoted him? I'm like, he was promoted by a fireman who he was training with out of his garage. I'm like, oh. He's like, yeah. And I thought it was some sort of secret thing, you know? And then I met Pat, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I started training at the Gracie Academy when it was still in Torrance. And, you know, and he was just talking about Hoist. I'm like, what? And I'm like, no way. Like Hoist? He goes, yeah, you know, yeah. He goes, yeah, we'll go to the Gracie Academy someday. And I'm like, what is going on, you know? And that's how I started going to the Gracie Academy, and that's where I met like Grandmaster Hoy and Gracie and Henner and Huron and Hickson and Halleck and Hoyler and Holker and all these guys that, you know. And then I walk in and it's like a gigantic, they just moved from the original Torrance Academy to their brand new Artesia Academy, where they bought the building and it was like massive. You know, they had like a museum in there, and now they're at the Gracie University. But at the Artesia Gracie Academy, it was like, I mean, it was massive, and it was like two floors. But like you know, it was beautiful, like bathrooms, locker rooms, and all that. And you walk down this hallway, and then it opens up into this huge mat space, like. It's probably 4 of ours.
Oh, very nice.
It was massive. You know how they get the green, like what do you call that? Tarp mat, you know? And it was just crazy. We went on, I remember the first time we went there was on a Saturday, and it was insane. It was like 12 o'clock class, and Grandmaster Hoyan was there, and Henner and Huron were teaching, and there's a bunch of black belts there. And I've never seen so many black belts, because back then it was all like white, blue, purple, and then that was it. And then like brown belt was like, oh my god. Yeah. It's like, you know what I mean? Even blue belts were like, yeah, but it's like purple belt was like really the wizard. Mm-hmm. Like the wizard of jiu-jitsu was like the purple belt, and we go to the Gracie Academy, and then there's black belts all over the place, brown belts all over the place. I'm like, oh my god. And it was amazing. So, and you know, and I just was, we would go there pretty frequently. We'd try to make a trip out there every Saturday. And I trained at that time already because it was, like, right by my office, literally, like, 6 days a week. And then became good friends with Pat, and then we were, like, you know, and then everybody was, like, it was, like, a very friendly type of camaraderie. And it was the same, like, 20, 25 people going training, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was fantastic. It was absolutely one of the most precious segments of my time frames of my jiu-jitsu journey. You know, so.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, I mean, like I mentioned, yeah, we'll definitely have to do multiple.
Yeah, we could do more. No problem.
There's so many different items that want to get to, but we will save that for another day.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're going to move to our lightning round here.
Just all got right.
A few little questions to kind of wrap things up. Mm-hmm. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
You know, I do have a favorite technique that's in rooted. I love the gi. So for me, it's not necessarily that I have a favorite technique. I have a absolute love for utilizing lapels and leveraging lapels as extra arms in order to be able to apply submissions that I've been very blessed to, like, you know, even have come up with sitting in church. And I don't mean that in a bad way, during Sunday service, that like all of a sudden I get like God just like, you know, downloaded or uploaded into my head certain stuff. And, you know, I started utilizing lapels when I was a brown belt, when I was training with Master Jean-Jacques Machado, who promoted me to black belt back in 2016. But in 2014, I was a brown belt, and the guys over there were like really, really good. And I just needed something different because conventional jiu-jitsu, just I had no chance. You know what I mean? It's like, especially with black belts and stuff. And I began to kind of explore and try to see what else I could possibly come up with. And I began to really like came across like lapel submissions and from really unconventional positions that most weren't really aware were even possible. And they didn't, nobody was using lapel submissions. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I was doing, nobody at all hadn't even seen what that was. And it enabled me to really, I would say, if it really is a favorite technique, yes, I do have one. It is like a Peruvian necktie with the lapel when you have the other person in a turtle. And Master Jean-Jacques called it the Gregorian. And that was the first lapel. I didn't call it the Gregorian, but he used to call me Gregor, like Gregor Gracie. Mm-hmm. So he would, and every time I pull out my left lapel and they would turtle, and I would hit that on everybody. Everybody except him and a couple of the other black belts. And I never even came close to having him in a position that I would be able to do that. But at the same time, I was unable to achieve this with a few other black belts that I wouldn't really see too frequently, and maybe I didn't roll with them and all that. But I've most definitely made some not friends after applying it, you know. And that's when it started, and then I was able to, back in 2020, release my first instructional on BJJ Fanatics. That was my first Gregorian lapel submission system that Bernardo Faria and Michael Zenga, who are the owners of BJJ Fanatics, I filmed that first lapel system, and I'm like, well, what do you guys want to call it? Here's the story of the Gregorian, and I told them the Jean-Jacques name, and then, oh, we could call it the lapel, blah, 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 blah. They're like, no, the Gregorian's cool, and it's great, you know? Yeah. I did not come up with the Gregorian. I did not name it after myself. Everybody, you know, my haters say, oh, he's so ego, and you even called it after that. I did not call it after myself. Master Jean-Jacques came up with that. Every time I pull out my left lapel, I go, oh, here comes the Gregorian. And that was him. So, yes, lapel submissions are my thing. I have 5 best-selling instructionals, and I teach it all to my students. You see me use it countless times. Yeah, I've taught it.
Today.
Today, yeah, you've seen it. Nice. And lapels, because, you know, it's like, you know, otherwise, who wants to do no-gi jiu-jitsu in the gi? Mm-hmm. You want to do no-gi? Great, do no-gi. But when you're in the gi, use the gi. If you don't know how to use the gi, it's like you have a... I don't know, like a big Ford 4x4 truck and all that, but you drive it like as if it's like a, you know, like a Prius. Mm-hmm. You know, you go off roading with it, you use it for what it is. You know, yeah, what I mean? Don't exactly. Just, you know. So that's exactly. lapels, GregHamiltonBJJ.com. So that's
yeah, fine. Very nice. I like it. So the since there's no forms in jiu-jitsu, yes. we will skip that one. That's the next one.
They kind of are, but not exactly.
Yeah, we'll move on from that one. Yep. I think you kind of answered it, but I will ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite weapon?
You mean. I would say my favorite weapon is my knowledge of jiu-jitsu and my ability to be able to do things to other human beings that are absolutely frightening. And I have the restraint not to, and to always use my, let's just say, superpowers that I've learned only for good and mm-hmm. only to protect and serve, let's just say. As far as my favorite weapon, it would probably be my firearm. You know what I mean? That I carry. One of the best things about living in Texas is that, you know, you get to carry a concealed weapon. And I have no interest in sitting here and engaging in any hand-to-hand combat, and especially with my daughters and that kind of stuff. So I would say I'm my own favorite weapon. But at the same time, I think my wonderful just Wilson Combat 9mm that is very small and compact is my favorite weapon.
Very nice. I like it. Right. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be? You can also include people that you have already trained with. Just anybody ever, anywhere.
One?
As many as you want.
I would say that instinctively... The one that I would absolutely love to have not only trained with, but be mentored by and to be trained with and to learn from is Master Hickson Gracie.
Very nice.
I say this because he's going through his biggest fight of his life. And I would say that he's always been a incredibly like surreal godlike figure to everybody in jiu-jitsu. It's like he was the god of jiu-jitsu, like the Zeus of jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. you know? And I really learned that, like, the inspiration that he's had on me. I've met him several times. I've never actually had a chance to, like, train with him, per se. Mm-hmm. But I've had several opportunities to learn from him. And in learning from him and the incredible inspiration that he has been to me, that would probably be one of the most amazing experiences to me personally, is to just spend time with him, and to spend time with him in a way where, not even necessarily, I mean, I would love to have like actually rolled with him in his prime, but he's such a larger than life figure. I remember like the first time I met him, it was literally like time stopped, like stood still, you know what I mean? And it really was just surreal, you know? I mean, I grew up in LA, so celebrities for me were never like anything all that special.
Yeah.
And I don't see a lot of celebrities, you know? You go out on Friday nights, Saturday nights, or whatever, you know, and you see them in these clubs and all. But man, like athletes, and in particular, like first time I saw Hoist, it was literally like just indescribable, but mm-hmm. Master Hicks and Gracie, I would say. And I really would love to be able to say that I had an opportunity to learn from Grandmaster Helio and Grandmaster Carlos, because I think that that would be an incredibly wonderful thing to be able to pass to my students as something that I have experienced. So those two, Grandmaster Hicks and Gracie and Grandmaster and his dad, Helio Gracie, and Grandmaster Carlos Gracie, who's Enzo's grandfather. So
very nice.
Very blessed to represent as, like, truly a pure lineage, you know, because Enzo's Master Enzo's dad is Grandmaster Carlos. So it's truly amazing to have this opportunity, you know.
I like it. All right. Well, final thing here.
Yes.
Now is your time for a shameless self-promotion. So
yes.
Anything you want to plug, anything you want to say that we haven't got to, that you want to get out there, now's your time. And
yes,
we'll close out from there.
First and foremost, I wanted to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for blessing me, with this incredible life that I have as a result of, all of his blessings. I should have really started out with that, but I, say this with, in the most, everything that I am is the result of God's blessings. Everything that my life consists of is the result of blessings and the salvation that our Lord and Savior has provided me with. If not for Jesus Christ dying on the cross for our sins to be forgiven, I don't know where my life would be, because my life was going in an incredibly horrific direction, even though that everything on the outside seemed great and abundant financially and all that, but everything was falling apart. And as a result, you know, all I can say is that all glory be to God. And everything that this academy, Enzo Gracie Jiu-Jitsu DFW, is built on as a foundation of God's blessings. And that's another story to tell. But without, like, seeking God's wisdom and without the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit guiding me and giving me the discernment to be able to even drive by this street and look in this direction is all God's will. And God's hand was ever present in the formation of this beautiful academy, the way that it all came together. And like I said, it's a story for another time. But, you know, Enzo Gracie Jiu-Jitsu DFW is the only Enzo Gracie Academy in Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex and in North Texas. And Professor Philip and I and Mike, and we couldn't be more grateful and blessed to represent a true pioneer of not only Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, Master Enzo, but a pioneer of MMA, an amazing human being, an amazing spirit, an amazing probably the most charismatic and just huge personalities in jiu-jitsu and just in martial arts and just in a real deal. I mean, this guy's still fighting on subways, you know, just applying, fighting on a subway, on a train, kicking a guy, falling out onto the concrete, onto the, and then he shows us the technique he did in the subway while he was here teaching our students in December. It's absolutely amazing. So, Henzo Gracie, jiu-jitsu-dfw.com. We are here. Three kids, ages 3 and up. Kids, teens, adults. We have an amazing law enforcement program. All law enforcement officers need to learn jiu-jitsu. This is vital. Everybody needs to learn jiu-jitsu. For law enforcement, for women, for men, for kids, teens, adults, everybody. We have a 3-week trial. I would love to invite everybody to come in here. We have a beautiful 6,000 square foot facility, as you see. We have beautiful mat space. We have a Muay Thai room separate from Muay Thai boxing. We have showers. We have everything that is absolutely most other academies don't have. And what we have here is something truly special. We have Professor Philip here, who is an absolute blessing from God and my first black belt. I couldn't be more blessed to know that my first opportunity to promote a black belt was this incredible human being by the name of Philip Bullock. And to understand what an amazing human being he is, what an amazing spirit he is, what an amazingly loyal, what an amazing driven discipline, and just like somebody who truly brings the best out of me in every way. He tells me, you know, that I'm his professor. Believe me, I think that it's very possible I may have learned a lot more from him than even he has from me. He brings the best out of me. He holds me accountable in ways where he's not even trying. And one of the most beautiful things about this academy is him. The amount of energy, the amount of life, the amount of love for jiu-jitsu. I love jiu-jitsu, but it may possibly be like I love the technical jiu-jitsu about it. I love studying jiu-jitsu, creating techniques, systems, and all that. But like Philip, like, really loves like jiu-jitsu.
Oh yeah,
I mean. And it's almost like I'm like, man, like, does he love jiu-jitsu more than I do? And I'm like, man, he like loves jiu-jitsu like it's like Philip loves humanity.
Oh yeah,
I love people. It's like that, you know what I mean?
I get it.
And I would say the most amazing special thing about this academy is this. Professor Philip, what he brings to kids, what he brings to adults, his energy, his charisma, it's just absolutely amazing. And our students. These aspects, the community that we have built here at Henzo Gracie DFW, the amazing people that we have, the village that we have, the incredible camaraderie, the caring people we have, like, and I preach this to all my students, that your partner safety is your responsibility. We are here to build each other up, forge each other, but never to break each other down. Like other schools teach that, oh, you get injured, it's on you, and you better blah, 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 mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, and we know, there's plenty out there like that. And we just are so, again, and God puts people, the right people in your life, and God removes the people from your life that don't need to be in your life. And this academy is like the embodiment of this filtration and this process where God pruned all the branches off our vine that were dead and had no use and bared no fruit. And he just put everybody in our lives that just really just inspires us and brings the best out of us. Like I won't go on too long because I can't. But I tell all my students, I said, jiu-jitsu will give you purpose. Professor Philip, myself, our coaches, our students, we will give you accountability. But the students give us as instructors this sense of responsibility to always lead from the front, to always walk the walk, and to always be an example of what we preach and teach and mentor for our students. There's far too many out in this jiu-jitsu world that are all full of shit, okay, that teach jiu-jitsu but live a lifestyle that doesn't embody honor, discipline, and, you know, leadership and all of these qualities that first and foremost you have to understand. You have a responsibility to your students, especially to the kids. And a lot of these guys, they have no clue. But our students really truly bring the best out of us. And it's like they hold us accountable. You guys don't even know, you know. But you do. You'll never see us. You'll never see Philip. You'll never see me out, like, oh, like partying or whatever it is, like some dude. I'm like, oh, we're going out with our students, or we're getting wasted and all that kind of stuff. The thing is that builds like team unity. None of that. And you have to lead by example. And we always lead from the front. And like I said, and I'm here 7 days a week. I don't have to be. I'm here twice a day, usually afternoons and evenings. I'm here because I love this academy and I love our students. And I'm here for each and every one of them. You have no idea, Reggie, how many students communicate with me on an individual basis. How many are going through their own hard times. How many are going through their own personal storms. How many desperately need jiu-jitsu in their lives as a source of strength, as a source of empowerment, as a source of certainty that they'll make it through the storm. And I always bring it back to this reality that, you know, in life there are three stages. Our Lord and Savior pulls us into a storm to test our faith in Him, to embolden our faith in Him, and to draw us closer to Him. And through faith in Christ, our Lord and Savior, and only through faith in Christ, we will make it out of the storm and He will pull us out of the storm. So you go into the storm, through a storm and out of a storm, and then you see this light, and then the light of truth, and the light, and the sun, and then everything's clear, and then all exiting one storm is just entering another storm. And that's all it is. And jiu-jitsu is either a pillar or a crutch. And for me, honestly, even in the position I am, jiu-jitsu really plays the role of a crutch. Because everybody goes through their hard times. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, it's a crutch, 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 and then all of a sudden it's a pillar, 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 and then you make like leaps, you like a pull on, then oh man, and then you bust your ankle and then back to the crutch.
Yeah.
So you know, oh, yeah. So jiu-jitsu is amazing, and the therapeutic aspects of mental health, the well-being, the social aspects. It's like, you know, you get a healthy body, healthy mind, healthy socially, healthy spiritually, and it's vital for people. And so many people lean on jiu-jitsu like a crutch in ways that I help them, Philip helps them, and we're here to help all of our students get through all their hard times and help them have the faith that they need that it will be okay, you know?
I like it. Well, yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to tell me your story.
Thank you, Reggie.
We're going to definitely get into to more at a later time,
but
yeah, just thank you so much, and I can't wait to get this together for everyone to hear. And,
awesome, my brother. Thank you so much. I'm very proud of you, and thank you very much for trusting us with your jiu-jitsu journey. I know that you have been in martial arts even longer, much longer than I have, and it's a wonderful blessing and a huge honor to have you as one of our students and part of our jiu-jitsu family. And we're very blessed. We're surrounded by amazing human beings that, you know, that bring the best out of us. And you're truly one of them. Thank you very much for inviting me on the show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.